tradition continues as WABC presents John Gambling with the mayor of the greatest city in the world, Mike Bloomberg.
Yes, indeed. It is that time, a Friday John Gambling Show with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Good morning, sir.
Chilly.
Yeah, well, I was hoping that you're going to get the sunshine out and warm it up to
about
65.
Well, we have the sun out. It's going to warm up to 30-ish or 35 or something. I'm actually supposed to be in a low high 30s, low 40s a weekend. Surprise, surprise. This is January.
Yeah,
it's always cold in January.
It is indeed.
And every year we say, oh, it's particularly this, that, or the other thing, and then at the end of the year you look back and it was always right in the middle.
So far, so good. No, not much snow. Just a little flurry here.
We've had enormous quantities of snow, but in the middle of the night when you were sleeping, our great sanitation department, the strongest out there, not only have they been cleaning the streets and the sidewalks, they even cleaned the grass.
The sad part is, ladies and gentlemen, he actually believes that. You've been a busy guy, flying around Texas, California, Washington, speaking out on a lot of things. Yesterday you had your budget for the city to come. It was described in the newspapers this morning as somber. Is that a legitimate
adjective? I think what I said was we have every reason to be pleased and every reason to be cautious. I don't think there's any question but that the economy around the world is very volatile. We're all interconnected, so if we have a hiccup in one part of the world, everybody feels it. The stock markets are going up and down like a yo-yo. And Wall Street profits are clearly going to be way down, and that means less tax revenues for the city. We are dependent on it. Our five-borough economic strategy to diversify, has done some, but we're still very dependent on this industry, as is London and the UK. Actually, we're in probably a little bit better shape. A little bit smaller percentage of our revenues come from Wall Street than London's does. But in good times, that helps, and in bad times, it's not so good. So real estate transaction tax is going to be a lot less. That easy to measure and for sure. So we're going to have less revenue, and when things get tough, the city has obligations to help people and do things, so our expenses tend to go up when things – at the same time your revenue goes down. Now, the good news is we have in the past prepaid interest and put money into a trust fund for – city workers' health care down the road. We've reduced expenses for this half of the year by 2.5% and insisted all agencies identify how they're going to do it for next year for 5%. So we have done a lot of things. And incidentally, with the city council, deserves some credit. We didn't go in the good times and ratchet up expenses dramatically. Did they get ratcheted up some? Yeah, people that want smaller government would argue they went up too much. But democracy is such that when you have revenues exceeding expenses in any one period, even if it's a one day, everybody said, let's spend it. The trouble is when you spend it in government, you spend it on an annual basis, and it goes every year. It's exactly like that. And that leads you to problems. So we've taken steps. Things aren't cataclysmic, but there's reason to be cautious. And I think for 2009, our budget's in balance. But for 2010 and 2011, 2012, we're going to have some real problems.
But deficits of $5.9 billion?
You've got to be a little bit careful here because, it's hard to estimate anyways that far out. But we have outside consulting firms and use a whole bunch of them we pay to give us estimates of what they think economic activity is going to be. You don't want to do what some people allege other governments do. They look to see how much they want to spend, and then they plug in a number and say, oh,
how are we going to get there?
Right. Here I want independent sources, and we use half a dozen. And they all say a decline in the economy and our revenues for the next couple of years and then a recovery. Now, will they be right? Chances are yes. Will they be in terms of direction? Will they be right in terms of magnitude? An average isn't going to be that far off, but no guarantees. Government has a business model of variable revenues, which we really can't control very much other than changing tax rates, and fixed to slightly growing expenses, which once you incur it, it's almost impossible to cut back. I was talking to somebody yesterday about the way the state had, there's some state laws that deal, if I understand this, with education outside of New York City, where if they don't come to an agreement on a contract with the teachers' unions, the wages don't stay the same the way they would in the city. They automatically ratchet escalate at the same rate they were escalating in the past contract. Whoever signed that law and passed that law, you wonder what was going through their minds. And now you have this situation where in all of these towns, the school, the voters vote for increased property taxes to pay more for schools mainly. It's what they do with the property tax. And then they say, please help us, stop us from killing again. And they want a state law that will cap their ability to raise their own taxes. Now, the people, why do you want that? You say, well, most people don't come out to vote for those elections. So since we can't be trusted to be in charge of ourselves, which is democracy the last time I heard, we want a state law that will keep us from doing what we want to do, what democracy lets us do. And the trouble with that is there's nobody that believes they would stop increasing spending.
Never.
Okay, so what are they going to do? If they can't raise their property taxes, they're going to have to turn to the state for money. Now, okay, everybody's in the state except New York City, remember, pays a disproportionate percentage of the taxes in this state. So what they're really doing is they say, we want to keep spending. We don't want to pay for it. We want New York City to pay for more for our education.
And the amount of money that the state is sending back to New York in the new proposed budget is less than it was.
Well, I'm going to talk about that in my testimony before Albany, the legislature on Monday. But you know, look, you got to be sympathetic to the governor. He's come up with a proposal. It will then go to the legislature, and he'll have to negotiate something. Nobody gets everything they want. He's got lots of people who want a lot of things, and their revenues are going to go down. I will say that in New York City, we've reduced our spending, or at least cut back the rate that we've increased it, and we've raised our own taxes. If you remember, I remember people picketing me, so not a nice thing, easy thing to do, but we had to do it because we wanted to keep paying. We wanted to raise the salaries of our teachers, and we did that by 43% over the last 6 years, but it comes out of the taxpayer's pocket, not somebody else's pocket. So I have less sympathy for the state than maybe they'd like me to have. My argument is we put our own house in order, or maybe not as much as the conservatives would like, but to some extent they should do it too.
I want to pick up on that and continue that train of thought. Let me take a break right here, take care of a little business. We'll come right back with Mayor Michael Bloomberg at 77 WABC. We continue. Mayor Michael Bloomberg, John Gambling, and you. We'll be taking your phone calls before we finish up. 1-800-848-WABC, 1-800-848-WABC. You were down at Conference of Mayors speaking out in Washington. What do you think of the stimulus package and the rebates?
Well, I think short term, everybody's happy. The markets go up. Everybody says, I want a check. You know, it's a Christmas gift for everybody.
You see all the politicians run so they can put their name on those checks?
It's an election year. Everybody on both sides of the aisle and both ends of Pennsylvania Avenue are going to do this. You're not going to stop that. That's just, you know, the issue. Oh, and then the next screaming will be, well, it only applies to earned income. So if you're a retiree getting income, let's say, from your 401k or Social Security, you don't get it. And so people scream, well, they deserve it too. And the issue is going to be, how do you make it fair in that everybody gets it and lose the focus of whether or not
it's going to do
anything? It's going to do anything. I mean, if your objective was to stimulate the economy, you would pick out those people who are most likely to buy things in the parts of the economy where we need it and give them the money. Now, the political reality is you cannot do that. If you're going to give a gift to the public, you got to give it to everybody or virtually everybody, certainly everybody that has a voice and that votes,
right,
given we have an election coming.
That's why they want to give it to
right.
senior citizens, because seniors vote.
Right. Look, here's where we stand. We have a problem in the economy, and short term, I'm not so sure this is going to make a big difference, although it certainly doesn't hurt. The checks won't go out for a couple months. People won't spend it. You're really going to hype sales in the holiday season next year. That's or a little bit earlier than that, but that kind of time frame. The biggest problem we have in this country, I think, are people about to lose their homes. And that's where I have a lot of sympathy. Now, I don't think we should bail out the banks. They're in the business of taking risks, and when they win, they should win big, and when they lose,
every turn, though, these banks want bailouts.
I understand that. Well, I understand why they ask for it. The question is, right. Why do we give it to them? Don't blame them. Blame us, you, me, the public, and our elected officials. Right. We shouldn't be doing that. I don't have a lot of sympathy for speculators. You make big bucks when you win. You lose big bucks when you're wrong, and that's what speculation is all about. And you can make the case that people who bought homes with mortgages where they overstated their earnings or misrepresented their ability to pay the mortgage or were just too expansive, too optimistic, you can say that maybe they should pay too. But that's very different because we in society have an interest in helping them. Even if you don't care about them, it's the effect if they lost their houses on our society that is intolerable. You have somebody that loses the house that they live in, not a speculative house, but the house that they live in. It destabilizes the block. It can destabilize the whole neighborhood. You now have an empty house, which, you know, eventually it runs down, and that hurts the whole neighborhood. That's one thing. Number two, these people, if they lose their homes, they're going to become wards of the public. We're not going to let them starve to death. We're not going to let them sleep on the streets. We're not going to let them go without food. But invariably, if you lose your home, then you lose your job. Then all of a sudden, instead of being a taxpayer, they become somebody that we have to support. Their kids suffer. And it starts a process downhill that's not good for society. So I happen to think you should have some compassion for them. But even if you have no compassion, for just self-interest, this country cannot let a lot of people lose the homes that they live in. Not the homes that they're speculating on, but the homes that they live in. We just can't do that. And so we should have a stimulus package that helps people. And what you can do is if, for example, they're about to lose their home, the government can make them a loan. So they still have to work. They still have to pay their mortgage. But you give them more time. They don't get hit so badly by ratcheting up in their rate. The second thing you've got to do is we have this enormous glut of homes on the market. And so anything you can do to make home ownership less onerous or less expensive is good because we want to get the oversupply of homes off the market so construction industry, which employs a lot of our people, can get back to building. But that's the kind of programs where you should do it. Then a slightly longer term focus, an intermediate focus, is not to get sales in stores up, although it's good for the stores and good for the people that work there and good for the economy and all that sort of thing. We have to do what the New Deal did. If you think about it, the New Deal didn't just give people jobs. It took the money and those jobs, and it built the infrastructure for all of the advance in this country in the 40s and the 50s and the 60s.
And since we haven't done anything.
Right. In the Eisenhower years, we started the interstate. And then nothing. We read in the paper about delays at airports and bans or limits on how many flights can come in and out. We've not invested in our infrastructure in air. We talk about rails. I was in Shanghai and I took this high-speed train, goes 250 miles an hour. Here, nothing like that. I mean, we're not doing those things. And that's where I would take – that's where federal money should be invested. And, in fact, we're doing that in the city. Water tunnel, buying land around the reservoirs, $2 billion of city money to expand the number 7 line on the west side, Second Avenue. I mean, a variety of those kinds of things. So short term, rather, if it was up to me, and it's not. And nobody asked me, although I did volunteer.
Well, it could be someday, right?
Probably not. Not going to be. I mean, I'm one of 300 million people, and I think I'll have that voice, and probably not even clear my kids listen to me, much less anybody else. But what I tried to say short term, to me, the highest priority is people that are about to lose their homes. The intermediate priority is infrastructure. You just asked me what I would do. That's okay. Their problem. And I'm not haven't been elected to that. I'm elected to work for the public
could
in the
be
city.
Someday,
and I keep saying when I get done being mayor, I'll be one of 300 million. And then long term, we are spending our children's money. I mean, we build things because they're politically popular, not because we need them. And I've riled about that. Nobody needs to have another lecture
from me. They're borrowing the money for this rebate. They're going to borrow the money.
Oh, of course they're going to borrow the money. They're not going to raise taxes to do that. Are you kidding me?
Well, they will someday to pay for the stuff they're borrowing, maybe.
These guys will not because they won't be around. I mean, I love this. There's one thing they did where the goals of some program, I forget what it was, an entry thing, were to have it done by 2050. Now, if you do the math, there is nobody that's in the House or the Senate today who will not only be in office, most of them won't be alive in 2050. So how are we going to hold it? You said back then, oh, yeah, right.
Yeah, it's safe. Now, you know that nobody will get tagged with it. Mr. Mayor, hang on. We've got lots more to talk about here on the John Gambling Show at 77 WABC. Half hour mark. Let's start off with George.
WABC.
Okay, we continue here with Mayor Michael Bloomberg at 77 WABC. One of the things, back to the governor's budget, one of the things he said, I read that they want to sell off a prime piece of real estate over there on 40th Street?
Chris Quinn has spoken out on that. I haven't had a chance to talk to the governor yet about what they're trying to do. This is a piece of property, Chris says, and I think she's right. I've got to talk to our people. Where it, even if you don't use it now, if you sold off that property, it would keep us from in the future ever expanding Javits Center in that direction. Now, the governor, I think, said that it would raise some money to put into Javits, but I'm not sure that's a good trade-off, but I don't know in all fairness. I haven't talked to the governor's
staff. You've said in the past that selling off equity either the city's point of view, is not a very good idea.
No, I mean, I think selling off capital assets to have some money is just never – I've never been in favor of that. You know, there are some things you do, but generally I'm not in favor of it. And I talked to our development people this morning, and they haven't had a chance to talk to the governor's people about what he's planning. This was an announcement that we're trying to sort of catch up on, and I'll get the chance to talk to the governor about it in the next few days.
The rebates that we just talked about coming from Washington in the stimulus package and the rebates as part of your budget, the $400, are they the same kind of thing? Are they targeted to do the same thing?
The $400 rebate is simply we raised property taxes 18%, if you remember. Got a lot of grief for it, as I said. We have the right to do that without asking the state. That's up to the city council with the mayor vetoing or signing a bill. Then there are four classes of real estate. The rebate really moves the burden from the single and two or three family homes to the large professional real estate owners. And the reason that makes sense is if you own a home and real estate prices go up, you get no benefit from that because you still have to live in your home. And in fact, if you sold it, you'd have to buy another home. In fact, you get a penalty when real estate prices go up because your property taxes go up with the assessment. On the other hand, at the other end of the spectrum, the professional real estate investor, people that do it for a living, they have a building and it goes up in value. That's what they're trying to do. They buy buildings, they operate them, hopefully make some money in the meantime, but even if they just cover their expenses, hoping the market goes up and then they sell it. Now, some family real estate businesses say, well, we never sell, but that's their choice. That is their business. And so it makes more sense if you have to have taxes, and nobody's in favor of taxes, but we have to pay our cops, surprise, surprise, have to pay our teachers, surprise, surprise, firefighters, sanitation, corrections, everybody. And we have to get the money from someplace. So you have taxes. The issue is to try to make the tax burden as tolerable and as fair as it can be. And keep in mind, people who have single family or two or three family homes, their taxes are going up anyways, because the assessments go up. This just makes it go up at a lower rate. It's true that the taxes are going up anyways for the big guy. This makes it at a faster rate, but they are the ones that get the benefit of what we did with those taxes. If you remember, we took the 18% and we invested it in more cops and paying the cops more. And what the cops do? They brought crime down dramatically, did a spectacular job, which means property values go up because people in a safe environment are happier.
Which is exactly what we've seen.
We took the money and we put it into the teachers' salaries. And what did the teachers do? They improved graduation rates and SORs, test scores, math, and English, and done a spectacular job. That helps property values. We took the monies from this tax and we invested it in parks and in culturals and in the sanitation department to clean the streets. I mean, in all of these things. So what I joke that, you know, we're not going to do it again, but the public did get, and particularly the big real estate owners who are the big beneficiaries of rising real estate prices, they got a very good return for their increase in taxes. And while you can joke and say, well, they should ask us to do it again, I don't think they'll do that. But every tax should give us the kind of benefit that we got out of that. We'd be in very good shape.
Next week, the congestion pricing panel is supposed to come up with a recommendation.
I think by the 31st.
Yeah, right. They're talking today about moving the line, if you will, from 86th to 60th Street. What do you hear?
There is, I think, five different proposals. A couple of which are non-starters because they don't do the two things we have to do. One, reduce traffic, and two, give us money for mass transit. If you ask somebody to not drive in, you got to give them an alternative. You don't want them to say, well, I'm not coming into the city to shop or to work again. That's even worse than having congestion. One, an alternate plan for license plates, even number plates and even days. People, they've tried that in other cities. People just buy two cars. I mean, that's ridiculous. Raising parking fees, that doesn't give us any money. A lot of people are driving, not most, but a lot of people can afford it. And if those that couldn't afford it stop, then others will maybe
take their
come.
Place.
Yeah, so because you have to have the money for mass transit. Then there is three variations on a theme which will do pretty much the same thing, although they have different advantages and disadvantages. One's the plan we proposed. One's a modified version of that where you move the barrier from 86th to 60th Street and you don't charge for going around in the zone. That would bring in less money, still has a lot of technology. It would leave us with an enormous traffic problem, I think, north of 60th Street. And then the last one is tolling the bridges, which really does the same thing with a lot less expense, although politically it sounds different. Why people think that? In fact, it wouldn't charge it wouldn't hurt people more, but that's a bigger political lift probably, although it is much simpler and understandable.
All right. Is there a compromise there? I mean,
in mind, the panel has to recommend something. The legislature then can do whatever they darn well please. And so this is just the first step. What I do know is if we don't have a plan approved by the legislature, I think it's the end of March, whatever the date is. If they don't do it, we will lose $354 million in federal money. And I've talked to Mary Peters, the Secretary of the Department of Transportation. Since the administration only has a few months after that in office, once you miss that date by one day, forget about it. You're never going to get back. And if we don't do this, I don't know where anybody thinks we're going to get money for mass transit. You and I just had a conversation about the governor's budget. He's struggling, and the legislature will struggle to make ends meet there. There's no extra money for mass transit, to speak of at all. So instead
are
of having
afraid that we're going to end up in a place where we end up doing nothing?
I am
just
always,
because of delay?
Always optimistic. But I think what is fair, if you don't do it by March 31st, isn't going to get done for many years.
That's it.
That's
okay.
It.
Let's see here. Terrible scandal in the narcotics squad, NYPD. What does Ray Kelly tell you about this?
We've reassigned. We're investigating. I don't want to prejudice the investigation.
Before
if the allegations arrested, right? If the allegations are accurate, it is a disgrace. We have no tolerance for it. And you can rest assured, you don't want to cross Ray. He's a pretty tough guy. He is doing as good an investigation as you can, and you can rest assured if there is something wrong, he will take every appropriate step. We're not going to mince words here.
There have been some intimations that, the narcotics undercover, this is sort of the world.
Well,
that
it's
these
a
guys and gals work in. I mean,
it is a difficult world. I mean, I met some. There was a cop shot about 3 or 4 years ago, and I went to the precinct to talk to, I think it was two cops maybe from the same precinct, I don't know, a long time ago. And they were undercover cops. And I went to the precinct to just, talk to the guys and the women working in the precinct and say, hey, we do appreciate everything you do. And an undercover cop, they can't tell anybody about what they do by definition, so nobody says thank you to them. It's tough enough to have somebody say thank you to a uniform officer, but these guys and women have nobody saying thank you. And I met a bunch of them out in the back in the alley behind the precinct because, they didn't want to be inside where everybody sees them. And I just kept thinking to myself, in a million years, I wouldn't have thought these people were
undercovers. Yeah, they
absolutely.
They do a great job.
There was a shooting on a subway, and I went to the hospital, and both the cops had been shot or something, not seriously. And I'm thinking to myself, they don't look like cops. And, you know, the guy that's sitting, you never know. And that's exactly the ways that you fight. You know, some things you can't be every place. So how do you provide a service, whether it's policing or whatever? The answer is you do it randomly in an unpredictable pattern in a ways nobody would expect. So people start thinking that everybody next to them could be a cop. And then that's a ways you get leverage. You don't have that many cops, but if you think everybody is, then by definition, maybe you'll stop acting that way. So it's a tough world.
Let's get to some school stuff here. Last week you said that you and Joel Klein have put in parameters that eighth graders, if you don't perform on the test, you don't go to ninth grade. I mean, it's a brilliant concept. How do you do that, though, for very long when you have backup? If there are a significant number of kids that don't get promoted.
That is a legitimate issue, and keep in mind it was raised with third grade, fifth grade, and seventh grade promotion, and it didn't happen because, well, there are a handful of kids who are just such problems. They have emotional problems and families that are in such disarray, your heart has to go out to them. And some kids are just bad kids, and you don't have to have a heart for them at all. But those are very small numbers. Most kids, when they realize that there's a consequence, like they can't continue to stay with their friends, believe it or not, they study. And it's no different than you and me. You know, we have to be if you and I realize that we're not going to get paid or promoted or have people at home say, welcome home when you come home, that's a consequence. And you work hard, and that's what these kids do. And then we have summer schools and counseling and all of that sort of stuff. But the problem, after the eighth grade, they go off to high school, and then you're in a different class every day, every hour with different teachers, and it's much harder. And the middle schools have always been problematic every place in the world because you're going from being a child where you can be told what to do to being an adolescent or quasi-adult where the hormones are going crazy and it's harder to tell you what to do. High schoolers, you have to convince them to do something. Elementary school kids, you tell them what to do. It's in the middle where you're not quite sure what to do, and the kids are different kids at different ages every day. I mean, one day they're an elementary school kid, and one day they're a high school kid, or maybe the morning and afternoon are different. And, you know, everybody that's raised kids, you know that.
Back to the budget, the state budget for just a second, and what it might do to New York City and the schools. The budget as presented by Spitzer had less money for New York City schools. Where in the budget does that affect what Joel Klein is doing?
Well, there is this issue of we had a commitment from the state a few years ago to add $6.5 billion to our construction budget, and we were putting in $6.5 billion.
Building space.
Yeah, and somehow or other people are in Albany saying, oh, well, that's just really part of your regular state aid. No, the commitment was clear.
Changing the rules or attempting to.
Well, the commitment was a totally separate thing, and if we didn't get that money separately, we're just not going to have – we'll have to cut back in half the number of schools you build. There's just no money unless, you know, the agreement we had, we'd put in half, they'd put in half. Then there is the regular state aid out of the lawsuit. Remember the CFE lawsuit? The state agreed to put in more, and we agreed to put in more. Now, I'm sympathetic to the state. They don't have money. And, in fact, we're cutting back. We're cutting about 1.3% out of a budget that has – $20 billion in it for education. I'm sorry, you can always cut 1.3%. In fact, it's healthy to go and say, let's cut a little bit and force the principals and the teachers and the administrators to say, is this program worth working? You always want that. It's, you know, every 6 months, you do it at home. Sit down, write out all your expenses and say, did we need it? It isn't that you're going to spend less necessarily, but maybe you want to spend it in a different place.
I've been talking about this for the past couple of weeks, right here, that exact situation, and yet it never happens. In fact, what usually happens is...
What do you mean it never happens? We're doing it in New York City. No,
but in the state,
I don't work in the state. I work in the city.
I understand, but
the taxpayers and the voters of New York City demand that I do it. And I hope we're doing it. I think so.
No, you are doing it, but it's just so frustrating to see in the larger political world, it never happens. You talked about smaller government. it can never happen, can it? I mean, just from an emotional, psychological, political point of view, smaller government is almost an impossibility.
I think big changes happen in crisis times. You need one of the things in anybody that whether it's in private sector, government sector, it is easier to manage in tough times than in good times, because in tough times people know they need change and they're willing to accept change, and in good times it's just let's add more money. And the way government generally works is you move monies from programs that work to programs that don't work. And the reason is you and me, because we don't go and call our legislators and say, I want more money for this program that works. We only call for the program that doesn't work. And so the government is always dumbing down. Now, there are exceptions at the federal, state, and city level. I'm not trying to condemn anybody, but just generically, people say, why doesn't government work better? That, I think, is one of the fundamental reasons. There's a constituency to add money to programs that don't work because people are upset. Nobody fights for those things that do work. And what's worse is those things that don't work or haven't worked, money is always the solution. You never want to close it down. Why? Because a lot of people work in it, and some people do get benefits from it. But also, it is that all the legislature can really do at every level is add money. You know, they're not running it. They don't know how to run it. They don't know anything about how to run any of these agencies or even what these agencies do. Their job is to allocate resources. And so they go in and they try to say to the public, I'm going to fix it by giving it more money, when in fact a lot of things would probably work better with less.
With less money. You're
sure. Right. I mean, in the private sector, you do that all the time.
Absolutely. We've gone a little long here. When we come back, we'll go to the phones, 1-800-848-WABC.
WABC.
All right, Mr. Mayor, we continue here. To the phones we go. Tom, you're up first with the mayor. What's your question? Get right to it, please.
Okay. Hi, Mr. Mayor. You made a statement on non-city schools' tax spending limits, and it's incorrect. Some of us don't want property tax limits because we can't control ourselves. We want them because we get blackmailed by school districts asking for 8 or 10% increases, or we'll cut your kids' sports and activities.
Limiting the... You shouldn't let them do that. You
vote for them and tell them not. I mean, I'm a
Tom's
big believer in democracy.
Right, though. Yeah.
Oh, I understand that. Yeah. It's like when if I ask for a cut of 2.5%, they cut the most popular program. No, you cut every program 2.5%. You can't let them do that. That's the way they buffalo you. And these are school districts where Tom votes. I mean, the argument is, well, nobody goes out and votes in these things. All right, so go out and vote.
All right, Tom, thanks a lot for the telephone call. Let's go to Al in Queens. Al, we don't have much time. Get right to it.
Yes, hello, Mr. Mayor. You have a Madison Square Garden that makes a lot of money. Big name fights, basketball, hockey.
What's the question?
The point is you give them a free ride.
No, wait, time out. The state gave them a free ride, and Christine Quinn, in all fairness, has been fighting it, and I couldn't agree more. They should not get a free ride. They should pay taxes like everybody else. There was the threat that they would move, there was during the Koch administration, that they were going to move out of New York. Yeah, come on, spare me. The Knicks
Madison
and the
Square
Rangers.
Madison Square Garden and Teaneck.
Yeah, right, yeah, thank you very much. We already had, there's a basketball
Nothing
team over there
Teaneck,
moving
the
to Brooklyn. There's a hockey team in Newark. They ain't going to move. They should pay taxes just like the rest of us. Unfortunately, they have a lot of power in Albany, and they helped stop the stadium on the west side, which is a disaster for our city, and we're seeing it now with the Javits crisis where we can't find the money to build things. We could have had a great new Javits Center if it wasn't for them. They should pay the taxes. Let's take one more quick.
Okay, one more call here, number
Nick.
Five. Nick, go real fast.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor. New York State ranks number one for the highest percentage of residents leaving the state because they no longer afford to live here. We pay the highest income taxes.
All right, what's the question?
Taxes. What is your solution to this problem, and why isn't the government trying to reduce the tax rates?
Well, the government's doing exactly what people want. The government's unwilling to cut anything, at least the state government, because people are screaming. They complain about taxes, but they want the services. And the bottom line is the state legislature and the governor have got to get together and reduce spending. Otherwise, they can't reduce taxes, and the same thing in the city, or at least get something for it. And it's complex. I'm not criticizing the state government, but that's what they've got to do. We do have very high taxes in this state and in this city. In the city, population is growing, so it's not keeping people from here. In the state, population's declining. Says the city's spending its money better than the state, I guess. I don't know.
We got to go. Johnny's talking behind us here.
See you next weekend.
All right. Look forward to it, Mr. Mayor. Have a good one.